Welcome back to Hash Right Up. Today is all about insurance. I sat down with Patrick Detz, Senior Vice President of IMA Corp. They are an insurance brokerage and consulting company that has focused on the Bitcoin mining industry for quite a while now. They help the largest miners, the smallest miners, to worry about risk and make sure that everybody's covered on all fronts. They also manage premiums. He managed to turn a topic which I thought to be a bit more on the dry side into something actually super interesting and all about, you know, weighing the risks that are in the future, making sure everything is properly set up and optimized. Guys, Hash Right Up starts now. I hope you learned something new. Enjoy. All right, we're back. Welcome back to Hash Right Up. Like I said in the brief introduction, I'm here with Patrick Detz of IMA Financial Group. He is the Senior Vice President over there. We're going to talk about insurance. Dry topic for many that will probably listen now right now. It's like, oh, insurance, why are we talking about insurance? But I think it's very important, especially because there's so much money going into this industry and it's so capital intensive and people have to cover their ass a bit more, I feel like, and it's probably often an area that's overlooked. Welcome, Patrick, to the show. Thank you for making the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I feel like I've heard insurance called a lot of things. I haven't heard it called dry in a while, but I feel like that's a win based on what a lot of people typically call it. So, you know, thanks for the warm intro.
Yeah, I'm probably not doing you any justice. I'm just relating this to personal feelings whenever I have to take care of insurance privately for something. It's not typically a topic that I'm excited to get into. All right, but maybe we'll change that over the course of the next 60 minutes or so. Patrick, tell people briefly about you, how you stumbled into this, and why insurance and Bitcoin mining.
Yeah. I mean, I think on a personal level, you know, I first kind of got involved with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies back in 2017. I think probably like many of us, I had some friends that were investing in the space. And, you know, I remember I started did a little bit of research, but, you know, downloaded Coinbase, I think it was at the time, bought some cryptocurrencies, and one of them, I think, was Ripple. And so, you know, if I bought it on a Monday and Wednesday at like 10x, and I was like, wow, like, this is incredible. Like, you know, it's just like an ATM money printer. And of course, 2 weeks, it'll come crashing down 2 weeks later. But so that's how I kind of got into just the space on a personal level. And then, you know, I think over time, you know, it stayed within the news and I became more and more interested in specifically Bitcoin, kind of getting away from the various altcoins. And then from on a professional level, I've been at IMA for almost 10 years now. And, you know, I kind of focused in, you know, the technology space, or companies with rapid growth. And so with that, within the last 3 years, I kind of got introduced into the Bitcoin mining space. I had a really good friend that went to go work for a Bitcoin mining company. And so we got involved in talking about their insurance program. And, you know, 3 years ago doesn't seem like that long ago, but I think in Bitcoin mining terms and just Bitcoin terms in general, that's ages ago, right? So with that, we kind of went in there, heard that they had a lot of pain. And I think that's kind of like an aha moment of like, wow, you know, there's a lot of companies in the space that are growing very rapidly. And as you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of capital flowing to the space. And it's important that, you know, these companies protect their assets and their equipment. And there's no one really within insurance that kind of had it figured out. Or was focusing on the space. And so, you know, that was my light bulb moment of like, wow, I think this is a real opportunity for myself and IMA. And so the rest is history kind of 3 years later, and we've created our digital risk practice and, you know, now work with miners that represent over 120 exahash.
All right. So the broad overview, where do the most common risks typically lie that people do not cover? What do you guys do most often?
Yeah, so I mean, I think maybe to take a step back, I mean, if you're on the outside looking in into Bitcoin mining and don't understand it, for I think a lot of people can be very intimidating. And really what our job is insurance brokers is to, you know, understand your business, help you identify what risks there are within your business, and then from there develop a plan on how to mitigate those risks. And again, further, our job is twofold: A, convincing the client why we're the right fit for them to represent them, and then B, when we go to the insurance carriers to negotiate on your on the client's behalf, convincing them of why it's a good risk. And so, you know, I think when looking at it, I mean, Bitcoin mining is, it's a very property heavy industry, right? With, you know, many miners having well into nine figures invested between ASICs and infrastructure that can be containers, generators, you know, if they own a substation, buildings. And so with that, it's developing an insurance program around that and, getting more into the details of, okay, are you a miner that has the majority of your fleet centrally located and kind of a smaller, when I say smaller area, one or two sites, or are you a miner that has a very large spread of risk all over the US and even globally? And from there developing, you know, an insurance property tower around that. And then I think, you know, with the volatility of the space, whether you're publicly traded or privately held, you know, you're taking on a lot of investment within the business, and there's insurance policies that can kind of help, you know, protect the directors and officers of your company against that volatility. Because, you know, there's, as we've seen, there's been a ton of lawsuits in the last 2 years and some bankruptcies. And so when you're bringing on, you know, talented people to be on your board and help you, you know, get more capital, it's important to protect those directors and officers that sit on the board and within the company.
Are you guys at all involved in like litigation as well, or is it maybe something that you have insight into?
Yeah, so we don't get involved in that too much. I mean, we have a claims team internally, and so with that, we have lawyers that sit in our claims team. But a lot of times, you know, that is the majority of the time that's handled by, you know, either a company's counsel or outside counsel they hire, or the insurance carriers have panels of attorneys that they utilize. So, you know, that's kind of where it stops with us, and we let kind of the lawyers do their thing.
The reason I ask is because I recently, I think, yeah, the reason before you would have been with Justin Ballard, who is a GC for Adacon Energy and a lawyer by trade. So, and one point that we talked about was basically the immaturity of the business in this, because there's not that much history, right? It's not a very old traditional industry, and so. I think you might have a similar issue where assessing risk, you don't have much to go on, right? So one of the questions that I would have had is, like, how do you go about assessing risk? What's the typical procedure?
Yeah, I mean,
if I came to you as a Bitcoin mining operation.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's a great point. And I think, you know, insurance is typically an industry that relies on actuarial data, right? So with a lot of industries, insurance carriers have hundreds of years of data to go off of and help establish the rates. But, you know, as you and Justin talked about, Bitcoin mining is young. There's not that much data. And I think furthermore, there haven't been that many claims within the space. And you know, that's a good thing, right? Because I think, you know, a lot of miners are doing a good job of mitigating the risk. And, you know, with it being a relatively new industry, I think the majority of mining companies, they're building new sites, or they're using newer containers, or building new buildings versus, you know, putting their fleets in older decrepit buildings that are more prone to loss. And so, you know, it's twofold. You have a young industry with not a lot of losses. And so it's really hard for insurance carriers to accurately underwrite it. Now, they do underwrite it, and I think pricing for a long time has been pretty inflated relative to like industries. I mean, I think a comparison that we always try and make when advocating on behalf of our clients is, hey, we feel it's very similar to a data center. And I think now with the kind of the crossing over of HPC taking up some rack space with miners at their facilities, that rings even more true, because how a insurance carrier looks at a data center is much different than it looks at it from a Bitcoin mining facility. But I think once you kind of peel back the layers, there's a lot of similarities between the two. But, you know, insurance, again, it's a very archaic industry and it moves very slow. I mean, there's a lot of insurance brokers and carriers. I mean, I feel like we keep the paper industry afloat with the amount of paper that you get when you buy a new insurance policy and they still send it to you. You know, some people use metal filing cabinets. And so, you know, you have this old archaic industry, and then you have an industry like Bitcoin mining or Bitcoin in general that, you know, moves very, very quickly. And so it's really trying to bridge the gap between those two, to kind of make both sides happy. So when we're helping kind of analyze the risk, it really goes into and back to our understanding of the space. And, you know, is it a site in West Texas? Like, what do the risks look like there from a windstorm standpoint? You know, is it immersion? Is it air cooled, on grid, off grid, containerized, or in a building? And so it's kind of really sitting down with the client and understanding, hey, what does your current facility look like? And more importantly, like, what concerns do you have? Like, how much risk are you willing to take through the process and building the program from there? But, you know, we're fortunate to work with such a broad number of companies in the space that have so many different business models, whether it's, you know, an asset light model and, you know, they're using hosting facilities to mine, or they're self-mining with their own infrastructure. You know, I think that's given us a really good look behind the curtain of, hey, here's how all these businesses operate, and building insurance programs from there on their behalf.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, Bitcoin has this tendency to interact with lots of old industries, you know, energy, utilities, energy, oil and gas, logistics, also very old industry, right? And then all of it to just send out these hashes. Where do you see on the spectrum, where are your clients usually? Are they typically more risk averse or more risk friendly?
That's a great question. I mean, I think it's, you know, it depends that, you know, are they privately held? So they're only having to answer to, you know, a few investors, or maybe it's their own money, or they publicly traded and they're answering to, you know, retail and institutional investors. You know, I think maybe like people would think, well, it's Bitcoin, they're going to be, you know, really risky and want to take on a lot of risk. But I feel they kind of fall in the middle, because I think they view it as like, hey, we're already in Bitcoin and it's such a volatile industry already. Like, let's try and reduce the volatility as much as we can. And so they kind of land right in the middle. And you know, I think what we're also trying to do is have more products available to these companies within the space to help even further, you know, reduce that risk even more. You know, again, it goes back to, you know, 3 years ago, there was a very finite amount of insurance carriers that were even willing to entertain these risks and not offering a full suite of products. But now, fast forward to where we are here in 2024, we have the approval of the ETF here in the US, which I think is really important because it's signaling to the insurance carriers that, hey, this is a very legitimate space, and the SEC is well kind of willing to sign off on Bitcoin in general. And so now these companies that are mining Bitcoin, you know, our signal to the insurance carriers is, hey, let's continue to develop the products to help better reduce the risks of these companies and also make it a little bit more affordable than where it is currently.
I mean, you know, Bitcoin mining at the end of the day is all about staying online longer than the next guy. And being insured probably helps you do that, right? But then on the other side, it is an added cost. It is an added operational expense, and especially in times right now. And I just realized I haven't even read out the numbers, right? Hash price 4576, 616.9 exahashes. And just to complete this, 841, 806 is the block height we're recording at or started. Again, hash price 4576. The market is feeling a lot of squeezing right now. How do your conversations change, Patrick? You know, between where margins are really, really slim, are people all of a sudden much more happy to take on more risk? You know, rather than compared to when hash price is at like 100, you know, and then margins are nice and fat and people are like, yeah, sure, let's add this on top of the pile.
Yeah, I definitely think in the last, you know, talk about it now, even within the last 12 months, as everyone's been preparing for the halving. I mean, that's been an obvious topic with all the miners, and, you know, every dollar is important, but every dollar is really important right now. And I think for a lot of these companies that are purchasing insurance, it is a very big line item on their P&L. And so, you know, our job as brokers is to, as you said, you know, have a conversation with them and see how much risk that they're willing to take, but making sure that their programs are efficient as possible. You know, I think, as you said, 2 or 3 years ago when, you know, it was 100, you know, they weren't paying as much maybe attention to the insurance price because they were making a lot of money. And I think a lot of times they're so focused on growth and growing very quickly, getting as many machines online as possible, that kind of goes by the wayside. But, you know, fast forward to now and we're post-halving, the conversations are more around, hey, how can we make our insurance program as efficient as possible, just like our fleets? And so I think we are moving into a spot now where, like I said earlier, insurance carriers are willing to play ball a little bit more, and there's more competition amongst the carriers now, which I think is really important. Because with competition, it is going to breed, you know, two things. It's going to, you know, help pricing, but more importantly, it's really going to broaden the policy forms. And so, you know, what our job and what we try and do is we try and make sure that all of our clients have a really good understanding of what's covered on their policies and what's not covered. Because the last thing that we want to happen is, you know, something, there is an event and there is a loss and it's not covered and the insured wasn't aware of that. I mean, because that's after all why you're buying insurance. So when and if something happens, that it is covered and you can receive those funds back to kind of get your business back online to where it was before.
I think let's step back one more step again, because I have not fully understood this, and that typically means it's a good question to ask, because my audience, or some of them, they might be smarter than me, are not following either. You guys are, do you insure or do you broker or do you do both?
Yeah, so we're a traditional retail broker. So, and that's a good question. I'm sorry for not covering it in more detail in the beginning, but IMA is a US-based retail broker. We're one of the largest privately held brokers here in the US. And so we really act as an intermediary between the miner and the insurance carrier. So when we're hired by a miner, we go out on their behalf to the market and negotiate with the carriers to help place those policies. And so we're really acting on behalf of the client at the end of the day as their advocate within the market. So if a claim were to happen, you know, we advocate on behalf of our client and work between the client and the carrier during those situations. And more importantly too, you know, our job is also really education. Because again, you know, we talked about it briefly already, Bitcoin mining is such a new space. We've had to do a lot of education with the carriers of, hey, this is what it is. This is why it's a good risk. And ultimately, this is why you should give us great terms when we're negotiating on behalf of our clients.
Okay, but then look, I can only claim if I'm already insured, right? So if there is a claim, then I get you guys in to talk to my insurance that I, you know, hired before. Do you find that miners are mostly insured? And if so, what's sort of the typical coverage looking like? What are they looking at?
Yeah, so I would say, I mean, the majority of, I think now too, we're at a point where the majority of miners have insurance. I think if you would ask me that same question 2.5-3 years ago, it would have been like 50-50. And again, I think that was more of a result of the access wasn't there. It was very hard for, I think, miners to find insurance unless, you know, you were a very large publicly traded miner, a very large privately held that, you know, was having nine-figure fleet sizes for their ASICs. But now it's more readily available. And so with that, we just work on the behalf of the miners and go from there and help them place coverage. And so, I think now it comes to, like, you have insurance, but what type of insurance do you have as a miner? Is it adequate for your business? And I think some things that we found is, if you're a smaller retail miner, maybe you have 5 megawatts or 10 megawatts and you have a friend that's an insurance broker. Sometimes there are insurance brokers that maybe put things through like an online rating system and maybe don't fully disclose of what the true operation is. And so we found that sometimes there are mining companies that do have insurance policies, but the insurance carrier doesn't know what they're on. They don't know what they're covering. They're kind of misled through the process, which can be really problematic if and when there's a claim, because now the insurance carrier has grounds for denial for misrepresentation. And we haven't seen that happen yet. And that's kind of only happened a few times, but it is a possibility. And again, like, you don't want to be paying all this money and not have the insurance work when you really need it.
It reminds me a little bit of me trying to open a bank account with my business, saying, hey, I'd like to send Bitcoin, or I'd like to send euros or dollars or whatever to a cryptocurrency exchange to buy Bitcoin with it and send it around the world. No, can't do it. Right. So it's the same. It's a good analogy because I find myself sitting here trying to open bank accounts and then describing what I'm doing the best without using the trigger words that will automatically trigger the algorithm, right? And so it sounds a lot like that, where if the service provider finds out what you're doing, you then, you have problems basically. But then it's basically like having no insurance, right? If you sign up for something and you give false information, and you pay a ser for a service that you can never really execute on should something happen, that's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
But has that, do you think that has changed a bit? Are insurance provider more open to the industry in general? I mean, we already sort of hinted towards it, but just directly asking, if you go to an insurance provider today and say, hey, I am mining Bitcoin, does that still trigger sweat alerts for most, or not really?
Yeah, I would say now it's just triggering hesitation. 2 years ago it was a flat no. Like, they heard the word Bitcoin, they're like, no. But now, I think it's more of, okay, well, tell me more about it. Are they publicly traded, or where are they? So now there's more of a conversation, which is a really good sign. And I think what our goal is to eventually get on the property side, like in the US, when there's you're watching a football game on Sunday. You see a bunch of advertisements for, large global insurance carriers like Chubb or CNA, Hartford, Zurich, Liberty Mutual. I think the next evolution from an insurance standpoint within the mining space is getting one of those carriers to start to cover the property risk. Because now it's a lot of it's through the London markets. Some lines of coverage are through the Bermuda markets. And not that there's anything wrong with those markets. I mean, the policy forms are great and they serve a purpose, but back to what we talked about earlier of there's, in our minds, from an insurance standpoint, there's not that much difference between a Bitcoin mining operation and a data center operation. And those carriers I just mentioned, Chubb, CNA, Hartford, they'll cover a data center all day long. But they won't touch Bitcoin mining. But I think they're starting to dip their toe in the water. They're curious about it. And we've also had time on our side where we've had, 3, 4 years of rapid growth in the space and minimal claims. And I think that says a lot of how thoughtful, the companies are when they're building out these sites and the protocols they're putting in place to mitigate losses. And I think the other benefit too is, for the most part, all of the sites are in kind of risk averse spots. California, Florida are just brutal states here in the US for insurance in general. Whether it's, you own a house there, you own a manufacturing facility there, it's very difficult to get insurance in those states and even parts of Texas, mostly coastal. But if you look at the majority of the Bitcoin mining sites, there is no locations in any of those places. And so I think that adds to a big benefit as the carriers get more comfortable with it.
Can you say why it's so difficult to get insurance in Florida or California? Or what makes it tricky?
Yeah, there's just when you look at catastrophic losses here in the U.S., in California, you know, we've had wildfires run pretty rampant in the last 4, 5, 6 years, which the insurance carriers have lost a lot of money. You also have earthquakes out there, and they just lost so much money, they're just pulling out. They're not even offering any coverage. And then you look at Florida from a hurricane standpoint, they've gotten hit very hard the last few years with with hurricanes. And again, they're not profitable lines of business in those states. And, you know, insurance carriers are for-profit businesses. They want to make money, and they're just not going to offer terms. And then, you know, with the majority of mining sites being in Texas, it's mostly East and West Texas, you know, upstate near the Panhandle. And really the biggest problem areas within Texas are going to be coastal. So around Houston, Port A, Corpus Christi, kind of those locations in southern Texas, again, have been hit very hard by, you know, various storms and hurricanes. And then in Texas, you have a high propensity for wind and hail as well. But fortunately, a lot of the miners are, like I said, in East and West Texas. They don't have to worry about Houston and the challenges that creates.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like my thinking then would be, hey, you know, if there's no insurance, that would maybe decrease demand for energy. There's a lot of renewable build out in California, right? So energy prices drop, then maybe it becomes attractive again for Bitcoin miners to go there. And then sort of you get the leveling out of the market, right? Mm-hmm. Because essentially that's what that means, right? If I cannot get insurance for whatever I'm trying to do, I might not be willing to create the business in the first place, right? And then you get lack of demand in power maybe as well. But yeah, it's obviously more complex than that. But basically you're saying premiums go up wherever historically, you know, critical events have happened. Okay, understood. Is there anything sort of special when it comes to Bitcoin mining, especially compared to AI data centers, that makes it easier to ensure Bitcoin mining?
I think they're pretty comparable. I mean, we have a lot of clients that are doing both now, building out their campuses. So again, I mean, I think from an insurance standpoint, I mean, on the Bitcoin side, you're insuring ASICs, and then on the AI side, you're insuring GPU clusters. So, I mean, really at the end of the day, I mean, it's a very, from an insurance standpoint, I'm sure on the technical side, there's differences, but very similar infrastructure that goes into it. You know, I think from what I've seen so far, the values of GPUs seem to remain a little bit more static versus, you know, ASIC pricings 2 years ago, you know, it was $8,000, $10,000 for S19. And now that pricing has dropped dramatically. And so working, that's another thing, I think, back to your efficiency comment of, you know, really working with miners and making sure that their fleets are insured for the right value. Because sometimes if they're not paying attention, they may be using, you know, pricing from 2022 for their fleet of ASICs, which has, you know, gone down a lot. And so we want to make sure that that's accurate. So, I mean, all in all, I think the HPC / AI space is very similar to mining in the eyes of insurance.
Can I, so let's say I have a mining operation. I start insuring myself today. I value the ASICs at the market rate. And then a year down the line, the ASICs are worth more. Can I reconfigure the insurance to the proper market value? Is that something I can do, or is it set in stone?
Yep. Nope. So you always have the option to change the value really at any time during the policy period. So, you know, one thing that we do at IMA is we proactively reach out to our clients, you know, usually once a quarter. I mean, it depends on what the market's doing. I mean, when we were in the crypto winter, it was a lot more with the fluctuation of pricing and ASICs as well. But proactively reaching out and just saying, hey, this is kind of what we're seeing. Our data shows that pricing is, and we use a variety of different data sets to kind of help with that pricing. But are you still comfortable with this pricing? And nine times out of 10, the client says, yep, that's kind of where we have it. But there are instances where they say, hey, our fleet is has gone down in value. And I think that's going to happen more now, especially as miners are switching out machines. And so, there's a chance that their fleets are more valuable now that they're switching out a 19s for 21s as they look to become more efficient. So yeah, it's you're right at any time during the policy period to change that.
So this sounds like something that you do quite frequently, right? And as you said, you a part of every broker, and I find myself in the same position, is also education. You educate sellers on what their whatever they're selling is really worth. Give them feedback there. Maybe give them advice on where to buy the machines or where to host them and all of that stuff. So what other sort of areas do you see where you're typically engaging with clients to deliver education that maybe is overseen? Because I can already tell that it's probably very likely that people get so bogged down in the day-to-day, they will not look at the ASIC value again for insurance reasons, and then all the way down the line, oh shit, something happens. And now they haven't updated the market rate, and then there's all kinds of issues, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And really what our goal at the end of the day is to be kind of your outsource risk manager for your business. And you mentioned clients get bogged down. It's been a mad dash the last 3 or 4 years for everyone, to get as much rack space as they can, getting as many machines ordered as they can. And now be as efficient as possible post-halving. And so what we try and do is just remain very proactive for our clients and reaching out to prospects as well. Fortunately within Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining, there's a lot of daily or weekly events that happen, whether it be lawsuits or maybe a couple of specific examples. Maybe about a month ago, there was a couple of news articles about people, residents in Texas that live near a Bitcoin mining site that were experiencing mental anguish, and their animals were becoming injured because of the constant buzzing. And so, what we try and do is we take an event like that and we reach out to our clients and prospects and say, hey, I'm sure you saw this. This article got published. This is how your current insurance policy would react, or maybe you're not buying a type of insurance that would cover that. And if it's a risk that you're worried about, maybe we should have a further conversation around that topic to help cover that. I mean, I think something that's come into the light a little bit within the past 2 weeks is pollution. I mean, I think it's public knowledge that there's a publicly traded miner that is getting sued by an environmentalist group for, I believe it's air pollution. And so I think you look at a lot of different miners, especially that are occupying power plants, they're near water sources, or if they're in immersion, they're using immersion, and there's a large spill, it could, potentially pollute the ground or pollute the area around it. And, pollution insurance is something that you can buy. And there's probably not a lot of miners that buy it because they don't feel that they have that risk. But, our job is to at least make everyone aware of it, that hey, this is a potential risk. This is what's happening, in the real world, for lack of better terms, within the industry. And if it's a risk that you want to self-insure, great. And if you want to buy an insurance product, then we can help you with that. And I think, the same goes for this expansion we've seen internationally, with a lot of miners going into, Africa, Dubai, South America. There's inherent insurance risks that come with that as well, whether it be, you're having your team fly to South America or Dubai to perform site visits or have meetings. there's specific insurance that you can buy for your employees that helps cover them while they're in another country, even from a kidnap and ransom standpoint, as well as political risk, right? I mean, I believe it was Paraguay in the last, I think 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, they kind of pulled a 180. Like on Monday, they said, hey, I think we're going to stop Bitcoin mining. And then on Thursday, they're like, just kidding, like we're good to go. But there's what we call political risk insurance that you can buy when you are operating overseas to kind of help mitigate the, I don't want to say, I guess, uncontrollable nature of some governments. So I think as expansion grows globally, I think that will come more to the forefront. But again, I think as all these things are happening in the space, what our job is to stay ahead of it for our clients and think for them. So ultimately, they're just thinking about, hey, how can our fleet be as efficient as possible, and how can we continue to grow as an organization?
Yeah, no, it goes back to what we said in the beginning, right? Especially going back to pollution insurance, right? And I'm right now, Patrick, at a point where I'm like, there's probably insurance for everything, so I should probably ask you what there isn't insurance for. But I don't know, you have an operation, 5 megawatts, windstorm blows past, your containers, are not shut or whatever, and the coolant is all over the floor, like, and then you get sued, and then you're gone, right? Because you were not prepared. It probably cost you thousands of dollars, and yeah, if you're not covered, you're not covered. But then this is exactly what you want, right? You want to focus on your operation, and you don't want to have to worry, right? You want to be covered. But then the question is, how much does it cost me? So let's take pollution insurance for example, right? I run that 5 megawatt site. I have a couple containers there, maybe 5 containers or whatever. What does it cost me per year or per month to insure myself against the risk of me potentially polluting the ground?
Yeah, so I would say in full blinking lights, like this is just shooting from the hip. Because there have been times where I've talked about pricing and someone says, well, you said it costs this much, but as you can imagine, there's so many factors that go into an insurance policy in general. But I mean, generally speaking, for an annual policy for pollution, you're talking 5 grand, 2,500. I mean, especially for a smaller 5 megawatt site. So again, like, I mean, $5,000 is $5,000, but when you look at the grand scope of what your cost is for the site, it's pretty low. And again, I think it's what we always try and do is just create like a roadmap for our clients of saying like, hey, here are all your potential risks and here are all the potential or here are all the costs associated with the insurance policies. What's your budget? And okay, our budget is X. Okay, well, I think these three things are the most important, and that's where you should be allocating your money. And if things come up in the end, then or if things come up and you want to buy insurance for those other items, then we're there to help you.
Are you pricing, Patrick? Have you ever, we probably are doing this already. Have you started pricing your insurance products or the insurance cost in dollars per kilowatt hour?
That's something we haven't done, actually. I think that's an interesting way to think about it. We haven't done that, but I think it'd be interesting to go about that and
Because
be easy way to
that's the
translate it.
language the Sorry, yeah, that's the language your clients speak, right? How
Yeah.
much does this cost me? How much of my margin does this reduce? I don't know. That's it. Yeah, I think that's how I would look at it at least. Is there revenue insurance, Patrick? Can I insure myself against loss of revenue? And we briefly spoke about hash rate derivatives. Is there something you can do there to protect clients partly against hash
Yeah.
price of $45?
Yeah, so you just said like, hey, all the listeners are probably thinking, hey, there's insurance for everything. And so I think that is kind of the one area where the insurance industry has not caught up to Bitcoin mining and developing a product to insure against going offline and realistically the loss of Bitcoin mined while you're off. And I think carriers are still trying to collect enough data and seeing what data is needed to accurately price that. But again, like like other things 3 years ago, it's a hard no. You know, there's nothing even available in the marketplace. Fast forward to now, you know, we are working on, you know, a specific product to help address that need. But secondly, you know, there are carriers, and there is a carrier that, you know, has recently just come out, where a portion of what your operating expenses would be, you can buy insurance to help cover the OPEX of a site, which would include, like, you know, your power contracts and things like that. A portion of that can be put towards what we would call like extra expense. And so within that, you can include loss of Bitcoin mined during that period. So even though it is a small percentage, I think it is a step in the right direction. But ultimately, you know, like every other business worldwide, whether you're a restaurant, a hotel, manufacturing site, if you have a loss and your facility burns down or your restaurant burns down, part of your insurance program should be to replace that revenue while you're out of business. And unfortunately, we're just not all the way there yet in Bitcoin mining, but there are some, you know, outside of the products that we're working on and the market's come forward with, there are some unique things in the works. And I think, you know, if we were to have the same conversation a year from now, I think there'd probably be some products available, which is what the industry needs.
We should have this conversation in a year from now and see how it developed, I think. Or we can put it in the calendar right now.
You're right.
What are some key features, Patrick, that are very easy to do, that can lower your insurance premiums quite significantly, that you see people are not doing? If you cannot give away trade secrets, I won't ask you to, but I'll ask anyway.
I mean, you know, I think essentially what it comes down to is, I think one is information, right? I think, like I said earlier, you know, when you're working with your insurance broker, our job is to communicate what the risk is to the carrier. And unfortunately, sometimes when you're working with individuals, the information that they can give is limited. So the more information that you can give your insurance broker, so, you know, what safety protocols do you have? Is it fenced? Is there a camera? Is it, you know, is it a keypad or biometric lock to get in to the container? Like, all those things I think are really important. You know, how far are the containers away from each other at the site? Are they all 25 feet away? How often are you cleaning? You know, how often are you cleaning the vents, for lack of better terms, on an air-cooled facility? You know, what is kind of your protocol for an immersion site based on certain temperatures? Like, I feel like every year now in Texas, we have a huge freeze. And so, like, what are your protocols that you have in place for your dielectric fluid in the event of, you know, it reaches a certain temperature outside? So, again, I just think the more information that you're able to provide and the more open you are, the easier it is for insurance brokers to kind of help you through that process. And I think with so many miners expanding now, what we always try and push for and discuss is, hey, keep us included in, you know, any acquisitions that you have coming up or expansion that you have coming up, so we can learn more about the site. And by no means are we going to try and tell you how to build the site. But what we can kind of help you with is, hey, have you thought about maybe having this kind of insulation within the building, or, you know, positioning the containers a certain way? Because I think, because that would make the risk a lot easier to insure, and thus the premiums would be lower. So I know I'm not giving you like any, like clean your gutters or something like that, but I just think it just comes down to information and just trying to being as open and, open with the broker as much as possible, because the more information we have, the easier it is for us on our side to work with the carriers.
This is perfect, because I've seen pictures of sites very frequently, and I can tell you, if they had asked you before, right, and spoken to you, they probably would have set up the site differently. And this is just something, you know, what I said in the beginning. You know, insurance is not always the most attractive topic to think or talk about, right? And so people might just, all the containers get super excited ASICs are coming. They're here right now. We need the containers online, blah, 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 blah. And then they don't think about, you know, how do we set the site up properly from an insurance standpoint, because then, you know, it lowers our premiums by X. The way I, and you can confirm this, the way I think about how insurance works is you give them all the input, you answer all the questions. And some of the questions are quite detailed, like how often do you clean your filter is, I think, quite a detailed question, which hints at the fact that insurers know a lot of more about the industry than I maybe thought, right? But you give them all the information, they put it into a spreadsheet or some type of model, right? And then they come out with a premium, and then you negotiate around that. So my question here is, do they just compete on the accuracy of their models? How do you as a broker influence their way of thinking about their model maybe works? And what do I do if my insurer goes bust?
Sure. So I'll answer the insurer goes bust question first. I mean, I think, you know, what you always want to ask...
insurance for that. Don't tell me there's insurance.
Right. what you always want to ask your broker is, you know, what is the financial rating or financial stability of the insurance carrier that I'm using? You always want to see an A by the name of that insurance company. You know, it can be A minus or A, you know, anything with an A in front of it is good. And the reason being is, you know, if your Bitcoin mining site in Texas gets taken out by a tornado and there's a hurricane in Florida, and that insurance carrier is covering your site and a lot in the state of Florida, by having an A rating means, you know, they have enough assets and money to pay out both claims at the same time. Now, there are certain carriers within the space that are unrated and come with an inherent risk. And I know I sound repetitive, but, you know, 2 to 3 years ago, that was really the only option. And so if you wanted to get insurance, that was your best bet. But now I think as the industry has moved forward, you know, the majority of carriers are A rated, and very rarely do we see, you know, a B rated carrier or unregulated, especially on the property side. So, I mean, I think that's question number one. And then I think as it relates to, you know, the other parts of it, when you're going through the process, it's just important to continue to have that dialogue with the carriers on our end to really sell the risk. What I mean by that is, you know, hey, you could have 5 megawatts today, but if you told us your plans is to grow to 50 by 2025, then that becomes a lot more attractive to the carrier because, you know, you're essentially going to have to purchase more insurance in the future. And so when we're selling them on, hey, this is where they're at today, but this is where they can grow to. And the carriers ultimately want a partnership with good companies and good operators. And so maybe they can get a little bit more creative on that front. And I think too, it's part of playing the game, right? And that's what our job is in negotiating of, you know, creating competition amongst the carriers of saying, hey, you know, carrier A is here, you're here, can you be a little bit lower? And just doing a little bit of the magic, I guess, behind the scenes on our end, if there is such a thing in insurance, but helping drive that rate down overall for our clients. And again, just really highlighting the things that you do well. So let's just say you're an operator in Texas, your site's fenced, you have security on site, you're checking the vents, you know, monthly. You have a team there that's there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just really highlighting all the things that you do well, I think, goes a long way. And again, I mean, sometimes with some of our bigger clients that are publicly traded, you know, sometimes having an underwriting call makes sense. And so that's where we bring on certain lines of coverages. We bring certain underwriters on a call with a client where they can ask kind of pre-submitted questions so they can kind of get to know the client and ask questions that they want that they necessarily wouldn't maybe get from us or a piece of paper that you submitted talking about your vents. Because I think it becomes very obvious when you have an operator that knows what they're doing on those types of calls.
Understood. Patrick, how do I ensure myself against political risk? Like how is that evaluated? Because I feel like that's a very tough, maybe it's not, maybe it'll super clear after you explain it. But if I have operations, I don't know, in Paraguay, right? You mentioned that country. How do what's the insurance worth? How do they value it? And can I just insure myself against, say, I don't know, I imported all my miners properly, they've been running, and now my operation is essentially destroyed because I don't have access to it anymore because it was taken from me or something like that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so there's political risk insurance that's going to cover the majority of countries. I mean, as you can imagine, countries like Russia, North Korea, Iran, Ukraine, I mean, they're just uninsurable, right? And not that, you know, I think with Compass Mining moving out of Russia in the past, I don't think there's a ton of people proactively going into Russia to mine. But I mean, to your question, yes, I mean, there are policies that you can buy where, you know, if you are in Paraguay and there's civil war that breaks out and you can't get access to your machines, some policies will cover that. Or if the government were to confiscate them, or delay, you know, pause the power grid because of political unrest, things like that, sometimes you can find coverage within those policies. But I mean, some of it is just inherent business risk, right? Like, there is an insurance for everything, but again, I think it goes back to the fundamentals that we talked about of knowing what options are out there for insurance policies and what risks are keeping you up at night as a CFO or a CEO of a company, and developing a plan to create those or to mitigate those.
What about insurance in Ethiopia? Have you seen that become more of a topic?
It's starting to gain a little bit of traction. I think the more popular international places that we've seen have been Paraguay, Finland, Norway, those countries. But I think Ethiopia, other parts of Africa are starting to become more of a conversation. I think it's more of there's more education that's going into that. Because I think that when a lot of underwriters think of those locations, they think of it as undeveloped areas. And I think it's just us teaching them. And that's where working with the client comes in of like, hey, this is why we're investing $25 million of our capital into Ethiopia because of X, Y, and Z. And being able to communicate that to the underwriter, I think goes a very long way. And helping get the risk insured.
Can you provide insurance? Can you only provide your service with insurances in America and businesses that are listed or established in America, or do you have international clients with international insurances as well?
Yep. So, even though we're based here in the US, we are a global broker. So we have US-based clients with international operations. And then we have international clients as well. And, you know, I think within the last 6 months to a year, there's been a huge uptick in international expansion. I think as we all know, with companies going to Dubai, Finland, Norway, Paraguay. So with that, I mean, we've had to kind of adapt and grow with our clients in the offerings that we can provide. And I think it's the one challenge is if you are an international client and you have, you know, 2 megawatts or 5 megawatts in an international country, sometimes that can be very cost prohibitive versus a client here in the US that is 2 or 5 megawatts. There's just more options for them. But again, I mean, on our conversation a year from now, I think that will probably have changed a little bit because about a year ago, it was very cost prohibitive for someone that had 2 to 5 megawatts here in the US, but the market's kind of grown and adapted a little bit.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Patrick, you have changed my mind. I have tons of questions li listed down because we have to do this again. Because really, what I just realized was that the job you have is educating the industry about all the eventualities that could happen and going through them and pricing them. And that is not dry at all. That's very cool, actually. Where do you see this moving? Again, we're having a conversation a year from now, I know, but like over the next sort of, I don't know, 6 to 9 months, you've already alluded to the trajectory of the, you know, industry becoming more professional. Where do you see this moving? Like,
yeah, I think there's just going to be more. I think your traditional carriers that I mentioned earlier, I think someone is going to write one of these minors on a property side. I think that's going to be the next kind of evolution. And I think with that, you know, it's a copycat game, right? Like one carrier does it, then another carrier is going to want to do it. So I think, you know, in that meeting we have a year from now, I think there's going to be what we call a standard market that's within the space. And I think too, I think there's going to be a much better business interruption product available for minors than there is today. Is it going to be a full-blown product that you can get as, you know, a restaurant or hotel owner? Maybe not, but I think it's going to be pretty close. Because again, I mean, I think there's enough critical mass in the Bitcoin mining space now, especially with so many publicly traded companies and so much kind of approval from the government in various ways, that the insurance carriers are going to have no choice but to kind of play ball. So I think it's just going to continue to evolve. And, you know, if we can make it out of we've made it past the crypto winter, we're post-halving now, and, you know, we're still here. So we just got to keep moving forward and continuing to innovate and just be as efficient as possible.
One thing that we don't have time for that I would have loved to get into, maybe again, a year from now, yeah, we'll do that, is how much advice you give to insurance companies versus Bitcoin mining companies on how to insure them, because you have to bridge the gap somehow, right? But we can cover that next time. It's outside of that, maybe. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you wish I had covered?
No. I mean, I think hopefully everyone did not find this super dry and a little bit interesting. And, you know, if you can pull one nugget that is going to help your operation, I think that's a huge win. And, you know, we make it a point to attend the majority of the conferences, whether it be, you know, Bitcoin Nashville, Mining Disrupt, North America Blockchain Conference, Consensus. We will be there and, you know, always happy to talk insurance as much as you want, which for a lot of people is like 3 minutes. And then we talk about other things. But yeah, I mean, happy to help anyone that has any further questions.
How many people work at in your team?
Yeah, so IMA as a whole, we have about 3,500 employees, and then our team is about 10 to 15, just dedicated to the space. And so, you know, Bitcoin mining is our largest practice area, but we work with exchanges, wallets, custodians, protocols, and other kind of fintech that fall into the space. And so it's pretty diverse, but you know, majority of my time is spent on Bitcoin mining.
Where it should be spent.
Yeah, that's okay, right.
Cool. Where can people find you, Patrick? Oh no, hold on. We have to ask you, do you think that Bitcoin uses enough energy or not?
I don't think it uses enough energy. I think there's a lot of stranded energy that is out there and it can be used more. I'm in Minnesota personally, and it's very cold here in the winter. So, I think when I hear things like, you know, Bitcoin, you can use a miner for your water heater or to heat your house. I think that's great. At one time I entertained, I don't even know if it's still around anymore, but it was like a little heater that you could have at your feet, or like a tower that was had a rig in it. So, yeah, I mean, North Dakota is just to the west of us, and we've seen what's happening there with all their stranded energy. So, yeah.
No, Bitcoin heaters are definitely still a thing. Patrick, tell people where to find you, how to get connected if they do have questions and want to get themselves.
Yeah, the best place to find me is on LinkedIn. You can just search for me, Patrick Datz. Then I also have Twitter. It's digital_Datz. And the same would be my Telegram is Digital Daft as well. But yeah, LinkedIn's the best spot. And yeah, any questions that you have, reach out.
Yeah, maybe below this video, after you leave a like and a subscription, which Swan and I will be very happy about, you can list down a risk that you're wondering can be insured or not. Guys, I hope you learned something new. Next Sunday, we talk mining again. This was Patrick Dutz from IMA Financial Group. Thank you, Patrick, again for your time. That was a pleasure. Gave me great insight. And again, in about 365 days from now, we're going to schedule this right now. I'm not joking.
That's right. Well, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. We're going to have a chat again. Guys, if you learned something new, you know what to do. I'll see you next Sunday. Enjoy your day and have a good week. Cheers. Bye-bye.